5 years ago, a group of six Wellington friends started talking about the idea of living together in a purpose-built co-housing complex. The idea gathered steam, site was purchased, plans drawn up, and as of this week, the houses are complete. All the legal documentation and banking requirements have been ticked off. The two couples, one now with a newborn and two single people, are living in four terraced townhouses with shared communal facilities on the one site in South Wellington. The group has learned a lot on the journey about design, building regulations, finance, the cost of building, insurance and a whole lot more. Well, two of the group, Tanya Savisky-Mead and Alana McCrossan, are with me now in the studio. Morena.
Morena.
Thank you for being with us. Congratulations on getting it over the line.
Thanks. Yeah, it was a journey. It was a long 5.5 year journey.
A long journey. Tell me a bit about the journey and where it started, Tanya.
Yeah, so where it started, I think initially was a conversation between me and Alana's sister, Nicole. Just one afternoon, kind of chatting about, you know, the inaffordability of housing, the quality of housing, and the fact that we would all spent many of our formative years living in flats with our friends, and how much we really valued that kind of, the familiarity, the kind of socialising, the kind of essentially the family that comes when you live with people for a long time, and we'd really be sad to miss that if we had to move in order to kind of own our own home. So we had a series of dinner parties where we invited an architect and then a finance person, a banker, maybe a lawyer,
an engineer.
Yeah, basically we knew nothing, and we wanted to know a little bit more about what some of the hurdles might have been, and then eventually moved really quickly from that to realizing it was viable. Certainly purchasing a house as a collective was a good option, so we bought a house about 6 months later, and then embarked on our construction journey.
So Alana, how much did you know about this before you decided to jump in?
Not much. My partner and I were in Solomon Islands, I think, at the time. But we came back, and Tanya and Nicole and some other friends have been talking about it, and we were like, yeah, we're in. especially because at that time, lots of our friends had been buying houses, and we were sort of not ready to settle down, but also Wellington was home, and liked the idea of having kind of an anchor to come back to and a community to come back to after being overseas and stuff. So we were like, yeah, sign us up.
Okay, so you think you've got a plan. Do you have a plan?
No, we did not have a plan. We were really lucky that we had amazing architects, spacecraft architects, who are friends of ours as well, and they really held our hand through the process and kind of talked us through all the different hurdles that we'd have to clear. Not just kind of translating our kind of insane, ambitious vision for collective housing into something achievable, but also all the other experts that we would have to bring in, you know, the kind of the limitations posed by the site, although we were really lucky with our site, by council regulations, by what we could afford, obviously, by the availability of builders and timeframes and stuff. So really we were lucky that in many respects we were kind of guided through that by some very patient experts. But also we didn't have a plan because not that many people have done co-housing before. There are a few great examples, co-house in Auckland, in Dunedin as well. There's a great development. So, but yeah, there isn't exactly a kind of a established path. And so we sort of had to build one as we went.
Okay, so on that, I suppose, what difficulties did that bring when you get to the point where you've got some plans, you take it to the council, and what did the council make of it? Did they know what to make of it?
The council were actually really cool about it and very supportive of the idea, obviously. It was more kind of the financial, more going to find secure financing, get valuations, like get the bank's approval for it. That was the challenge. So the council are looking to do, you know, different things and supportive of people who are willing to give it a go. But for us, the real challenge was those conventional pathways that we had to go through to get financing and prove the worth of the project. So, you know, in order to get your loan to value ratio, you've got to get it valued, and that is done on a kind of market basis, and if there's nothing else in the market to compare it to, they're just comparing it to whatever else is out there. So, for example, with our project, the communal facilities, basically have no value.
As far as the market's concerned.
But if you get them priced by a construction company, they, you know, have a lot
they
of value.
They have a value. That's
yeah. Yeah. So that was a big challenge. Mm. The council were very supportive of what we were trying to do. And because we had clever architects, they know how to design within the council guidelines. So we got our resource consent pretty quickly, actually. So that went really smoothly.
Yeah. Well, that's really good. I mean, you can have a look, actually, I think, at some of the pictures. I think we've got a gallery on our website, rnz.co.nz. But just talk us through what the project does look like. What does your home look like?
Oh, it's great. We're so happy. We feel very lucky.
That's good.
I mean, it did take us, you know, it was a long time, a lot of tears and kind of like garment rending at various points. We thought it was all going to fall apart. But no, it's really cool. So there's small houses. They're like 90 square metres and they're sort of two stories with a little little third sort of half room in the roof. So they're sort of in a row, classic kind of terraced housing. And then, but as you, what faces onto the street is a common deck, which is connected to a common building, which is essentially a glorified plastic box at this stage. We have plans, of course, we always have plans to upgrade it eventually, but, you know, construction costs are, being what they are, it's pretty simple at the moment. But what it does provide is this really nice open space for socialising together, if you wanted to have a kind of like a children's birthday party, for example, and you wanted a bit of space, people to run around, that's not possible in your sort of smaller house, that's there for that. We've had dinner parties and just sort of, you know, spending time together as a collective. It because the western sort of evening sun comes into that space, it draws us all out of our own houses. It's a really clever design in that respect. And then on the eastern side, we have a little terraced garden, which is mostly a bit of a desolate zone of some scranty potato seedlings at this stage. But that's also really nice. So that's a shared space that we collectively kind of maintain and contribute to.
And we're very lucky with the site. We're right on the town belt in Wellington. So out to the north, we just look on to Mount Albert. So we get full-day sun. Everyone has beautiful, lovely green views and a lot of privacy, which is pretty lucky for a relatively, you know, inner city sort of site.
Yeah,
absolutely. So I suppose, how does it work at the moment? Obviously, you're just at the point of moving in. But what happens if somebody wants to move out, wants to sell?
Ah, it's a great question. And we've actually been a little delayed in our kind of the final, conversation that we need to have about some of those details about, okay, we made it to here, now what? And Smidge and Joe have been living in the Solomon Islands at the moment, so they'll be back shortly. But that sort of kind of changed a little. It did initially change, actually. I think we sort of had to quite quickly adapt to life circumstances changing and how we would work around that. And it actually proved to be quite easy in a way because we'd spent 5 years practicing how to have conversations about things not working out and kind of coming to a collective decision. But with the kind of what happens next, that is a kind of conversation we haven't had. But broadly, we do want everyone to be able to live their lives. You know, this is not necessarily something we've locked into for our entire lives. But, you know, for example, when we've had people come in for short or medium term periods, because we've actually lived there on site for a year, we just have only finalised the legal and financing stuff now. We've had people come to live as flatmates or tenants. It's actually been quite straightforward, I think, because we've got we sort of developed this language in a way of kind of making decisions and figuring it out.
But are you, I mean, effectively, are the houses that you talk about on separate titles?
Oh, yes, the unit title. So practically speaking, anyone can sell. Once we've kind of finished that, anyone is entitled to sell when they're ready. That the kind of usual rules and kind of ownership stuff applies. There's a body corporate which governs the kind of shared spaces. I think what we do want to chat about is, okay, how do we, if and how can we maintain the kind of the social connection and the kind of shared the shared connections that we have with those who are currently our neighbours.
Yeah. But yeah, in essence, it's a really common legal structure, just like, you know, most apartments. It's a unit title, so we individually own our houses, but we have a quarter share in the body corp. So if anyone needs to sell, you know, it's pretty straightforward. And they're not, you know, aside from having that common area and we have a shared laundry, aside from that, you could live a completely, you know, self-contained, normal, non-co-housing existence in one of the houses if you wanted to. But the idea is because we have that quarter share in the body corp, we stay connected and do things together to improve the site and, you know.
Yeah.
So now that you've been able to live in it for a bit, I guess it's probably a far cry from your initial expectations or thoughts about what it could be. How far apart are those things? What it could have been, what your huge wish list, and what you've ended up with?
I don't think they're that far apart. Yeah. Before we found a site, we did a dorky little visioning session and wrote down, you know, what our dreams would be. I think the one thing that a couple of things we didn't get was a stream running through the property. I think someone wanted a meat cellar for hanging hams. But, you know, aside from that, we were pretty pragmatic about, you know, it was really important that we would be within sort of walking, cycling, busing distance from town. We got that beautiful sunlight and views and just amazing houses. Yeah. I think, yeah, the whole way through, none of us really expected that we'd pull it off. So it was only sort of a month before we actually moved in that I was like, oh, I think this is going to happen. So for me, they sort of exceed expectations.
No, they are. I mean, I think especially when I've spent most of my life living in kind of drafty Wellington villas, you know, just to have a house that is not drafty, that's not damp, that's dry, that's warm, that's well-designed is, more than I could have ever hoped for. And the common space, humble though it may be, does fulfill that really important function of kind of providing a kind of infrastructure for socialising. So with that and with the garden, I'm so happy with them.
Is there anything, though, you wish you had been able to include? Maybe not your stream or your meat cellar, but, you know, is there anything else?
Yeah. Oh, yes, definitely the communal kitchen. So we really kind of, and maybe that seems like really kind of, I don't know, like ambitious. But I think with the common space, we really anticipated it being even more of a kind of an asset to us, but also maybe to other, you know, communities and people. So having some kitchen facilities in the communal space, so that it could be used, you know, you can imagine the kinds of things that might be used for with that. But that was one area where the council regulations kind of got in the way, because that would make it a fifth dwelling, which would incur a lot of extra costs, even though no one planned to live there. It was just a kind of, you know, essentially like an addition to a community, to the community facilities that already exist for us and hopefully for others.
It's been an interesting 5 years to try to build a house. Maybe it's always an interesting 5 years, any given 5 years. But, you know, pandemic, building supply chains, lack of tradespeople. I mean, where do you begin with that?
Oh, man, it caused a lot of heartache.
Although we were pretty lucky in terms of our timing with the pandemic. Mm-hmm. We were sort of maybe like 3 weeks ahead of the real bow wave of the material shortages. And we have a wonderful building company who had South Coast, who had really great relationships. And we managed to sneak in ahead of the real crunch for a lot of people. So, but it was only weeks.
Yeah.
It was quite stressful. And, you know, our architects could tell you lots of sad stories. And I think our project actually coming to completion at this time has been
a bright spot in the otherwise bleak sector a little bit at the moment. Yeah. I mean, like, so there's the Urban Housing Collective, a larger project on Adelaide Road, which is a beautiful design, a really awesome idea of essentially kind of what we're doing but on a larger scale, and the pandemic essentially felled their dreams, which is really sad. So, as Alana said, we were really lucky, but I think it's definitely in terms of kind of lessons for the future or things that you know, could be done to kind of support other groups to be able to do more of this kind of thing. Obviously, no single entity controls the construction market nor global supply chains, but, you know, kind of being able to basically avoid more price gouging of the market from the bigger players to have a little more, I guess, support for the many different kinds of construction that's happening in the community from smaller, you know, entities, whether it be individuals, families or communities, is definitely something that would make something like this more possible for more others in the future.
Mm. What sort of advice would you give people who are interested in doing something like this?
Do it.
Do it. Definitely do it. Like, be strap in for a longer ride than you expect, and be kind of modest in your ambitions in terms of what you might build at the outset, because you will be humbled, probably, hopefully in sort of small amounts as we were. But
I mean, honestly, it's just only really kind of solidified and strengthened the relationships that we had already.
That's interesting, because that could have gone a different way.
Oh, man, totally. And I think, you know, that was kind of, we look back and go, well, we kind of, maybe, you know, part of us subconsciously kind of sussed each other out. We're like, we're all on the same page enough here. But I think it's a bit of luck and a bit of timing that we all had a similar attitude. I think we had, it did help probably that financially we were in a similar-ish position. I think that would become really difficult. If you had people with vastly different kind of financial means, you know, kind of in terms of our values and what we were sort of prepared to discuss and negotiate together, we were on the same page. Yeah.
Yeah, having a similar risk appetite is really helpful. I think having a relatively small group, sort of six people, is manageable to get people together to have a discussion. And if you get a bigger group, it's a lot harder just time-wise to get everyone in the same room at the same time. Four of us were flatting together, and that really helped just be able to have organic conversations when they came up. So yeah, stay close as a group, but don't spend your whole time just talking about decision making and stuff. Remember to have fun together.
I mean, it has been such a life-changing experience in a really positive way. And I mean, having a premature baby is a really interesting test of all your kind of community connections, and like living next to people who are able to just provide incredible support, you know, meals and hugs and, you know, deliveries and handholding was just, you know, proof, I think, of how important and how beneficial it is to kind of be able to have that, you know, not to not be isolated, to live in community with people. So for that alone, it has been, you know, worth every penny.
It's quite a curveball to have had happen in the midst of all of this for you.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, I've not had a premature baby, but actually it sounds like a lovely idea having other people around you when enormous life changes happen, actually.
Yeah. Do you know, it's actually when we did this 5 years ago, you know, I was thinking into the future and going, you know, anticipating maybe having a family and thinking, wow, I think I'd find that really hard if I had to buy a house that was much further away from where my friends live and my family live. You know, I think that would really get to me. I think that would be very detrimental to my mental health to just be isolated. And so, when we got pregnant and, I realised that we would actually be living in the houses when it happened, you know, that was such a relief. And then obviously when, you know, things went a bit south, it was even more of a what felt like a necessity to get through it. So, and there have been many other challenges that we've all, you know, collectively gone through, and it's not always been easy, you know, certainly we've had our moments, but I think on the whole, we've all, I think, in some way really benefited from that kind of facilitated connection and support that the houses provide.
We've had a text in, actually, on 2101 saying you should write a book. Is that maybe on the horizon?
Do we want another project?
Well, I mean, you've just finished one. It must be time for another one, surely.
Actually, we do have a lot more spare time. Well, I don't probably now, but...
Personally, I'm happy for other people to ask questions and we can answer.
There is something to be said, though, for a little bit of a how-to guide, and I'm not putting my hand up to write it, but I think there are other... You know, we've been contacted for quite a few different people just via our blog, which is on Tumblr. If you don't want to look, it's very out of date. But we have our contact details there, and who want to know, you know, basically the questions that you're asking. And there are a few things that I think we could provide. We had to write up a legal deed when we bought the house together, that we could kind of cobble together the basics and save people some time and money from what we had to go through, some pitfalls, advice. Because there's no one way of doing it, but there's certainly ways of doing it that will save you a lot of heartache navigating the kind of the landscape of particularly financing and construction. And by no means we're experts, but I guess we did manage to do it. Yeah.
Things do change pretty quickly as well, though. Like when we bought the house together in 2017, end of 2017, you know, we went to mortgage brokers and we're like, oh, this is our plan. You know, there's six of us and we want to, you know, buy a section and build on it. And the mortgage brokers were just like, nah. And miraculously at that time we did get someone in a bank who was very supportive and helped us just get the mortgage as a group of six, and one of us was studying at that point in time, so, you know, we didn't have a job and they made that happen. That was awesome. And now 5 years later, they, you know, banks are starting to advertise, you know, mortgages specifically for groups of people who, you know, might not be family or couples to buy together. So, you know, in that space of 5 years' time, the banks have twigged on to a new market. And so, yeah, we have current advice now, but I think hopefully things will change really quickly and this will become normal and, you know, our challenges won't exist. There'll be other challenges, obviously, but yeah.
Well, congratulations on several fronts for getting into the houses. Good on you. Thank you very much for coming on 9 to Noon as well. That is Alana McCrossan and Tanya Savisky-Mead, who have built their co-housing complex together.